Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Hey everyone, it's Matthew Zachary, and welcome back to Out of Patience. What was once a show is now a party, right here on the same feed you already subscribed to. Why? Because I'm now the ringleader of a whole new cast of senior correspondents with segments featuring opinion pieces, rants, and the latest news about the shit show that is our fabulous healthcare system. The only thing that hasn't changed is our mission to make healthcare suck less for everyone. Let's get started. Welcome back, friends. Larry Reines joins me today, live in studio. He describes himself as an enemy of the status quo. This guy had me at hello. He's a long-term survivor of a very rare condition that has lots of syllables that you'll learn about during the show, polycythe-something-something. His humble beginnings began as a paperboy in the 1970s and 80s, much like the video game we all remember in the malls we grew up in. 8-bit looks so good when you're falling off a bike getting hit by a stick. He's been an active advocate for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, doing the team and trainings. He's a prolific blogger. He talks about what it's like to grow up in an age where rare disease actually has a voice and what you can do about it and how you build your communities. You know, I'm not a fan of just be your own advocate. Not everyone has the chutzpah embedded in their genetics to be their own advocate, but he's a great guy, very authentic. On the business side, he's the managing partner of something called the Alternative Board, which helps forward-thinking business owners grow their businesses. It's good stuff, but it's all connected to his humanity, his experience, and his leadership as a patient advocate over the last 30 years. Ladies and gentlemen, Larry Reines.
I'm never angry.
What are you, the anti-Hulk?
I am the anti-Hulk.
How do you stay not angry? There's so many things to be angry about.
Of course there are, and that's why I'm 62 and don't look it.
Is it true, though? Like, the older you get, I mean, I'm 48, and I can appreciate a version of what I'm about to say, which is the less fucks you give, the older you get.
Less fucks you give. Yeah, just if you just never sweat the small stuff, you're in great shape.
But you don't know how to do that at 22 years old.
Yeah, I actually compartmentalized. That was one of my gifts, is getting compartmentalization down pat. So things could happen, and you don't have to own them, and you can compartmentalize it away from your next activity.
So we're going to talk about you living with a rare condition from 26 years ago?
1995, what's
right,
that?
Right, that's 27 years ago?
Yeah.
Wait, how old were you then?
1960, so that makes me 35.
Okay, so let's talk about, were you already in a no-fucks-to-give space in your life and business at that point, or did it accelerate your no-fucks-to-give?
No, it accelerated my I don't give, yeah. It totally did.
Right.
There's no
question. So, I mean, this is really important. When healthcare falls on you, right, did you do anything wrong? No, of course not.
Right, no, you just wonder, why me? What happened? I did not me.
That'll teach you to roll around in raw sewage as a kid. Which we all did in the 80s, right? Raw sewage for everyone.
In the 60s, I drank out of water fountains in Central Park.
But I love this part of my show where we go back to like, well, we didn't die when we had no bike helmets and car seats.
That's true.
How do we make it? How did anyone live past 1980?
Agreed. That's brilliant, isn't it? It's true.
Where'd you grow up?
New York City and then Long Island.
Born and raised. All right, so Long Island, Nassau or Suffolk?
Nassau.
All right, that's a better answer.
Great Neck, New York.
Better answer.
That's it.
Specific. You're not going out to the fishtail.
No, I'm not. Not even close. It was still a city boy, right?
That's right.
When you're there, you go into Met games, take the 7 train.
Do you still call it Shea Stadium? Because I refuse to call it Citi Field.
Yes, it is. Sorry.
It's Shea forever.
It's Shea. And it's there. It's in the same spot. So I don't know why they would even change a name.
It's like when my dad comes back to visit Brooklyn, Ebbets Field's like a little triangle on a sidewalk now, right. But it'll always be Ebbets Field.
Right. Agreed.
Ebbets Apartments, whatever the hell it is. I know. I was here.
When they talked about moving the garden, I got upset because that was the garden is the garden.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't move it.
Yeah, that was just political, I think.
Yeah.
By nature. So as life goes on, things become old and new. We just deal with it, right?
So I feel like, so what were the 60s like? No, I'm totally kidding. I mean, this show is all about, obviously, consumer healthcare protection and some of the, I mean, we're recording this at a time where the country is falling apart. We always talk about the nostalgic aspects of healthcare when you kind of just died of things and now you kind of live with things.
Right. No, it's
better problems to have.
It's really true. It is a big thing.
First of all, what were you diagnosed with, and was it life-threatening?
It's called a myeloproliferative disorder.
That's a lot of syllables. Say that again.
Myeloproliferative disorder.
So, myeloproliferative?
That's correct.
Like prolific?
Yes.
So I don't want a disease that's prolific.
No, you don't, actually.
Who named that?
It's called polycythemia vera. There are a couple of different angles of MPNs. And it is proliferative because I make too much blood components, right? So my white cells, my red cells, and my platelets are too great. So we have to slow down the production. And
see, if you were the Hulk... Yeah. You'd be fine.
It would be great. I was a cyclist, and I always said to Lance Armstrong, I can give you my blood, and that's blood doping. It's sort of funny in some way.
Did you know him? I knew him.
No, I didn't know him, but I was a cyclist, so right. Of course I knew of him.
Did you do anything for Livestrong? I see you're doing stuff for Leukemia Lymphoma Society.
Well, no, because it was I did it for LLS,
right.
and team and training, and it was a wonderful experience to just get together with a group of people. And raise funds for disorders. Ironically, it didn't really hit polycythemia because that's an orphan disease.
Right.
So the money never got there. And my hematologist always said, why don't you help out the MPNs?
Do something at least.
I'm going, well, this is organized. You bring money into the cause. And I do believe that if you do cure some form of cancer, other forms are also taken care of at the same time.
Well, we're going to get to something that might blow your mind because like the next 5 years of like treatment for rare diseases is like Star Trek shit. It's crazy Star Trek shit. I want to get your thoughts on in the second half of the show.
Cool.
So you're in your mid-30s. Family?
Yeah. A wife and two children.
And how was this manifested? Like, did your head fall off one day?
No, it was worse. It was actually... My hands and my feet were always swollen, and I got to the point of extraordinary pain. And they said, oh, well, you have gout because your feet hurt. And I literally, at some point, I took my shoes and I cut off the toes of my shoes, and I walked around without shoes that had no toes in it to hopefully stop the pain. And the pain never stopped. And I went to all these different doctors, one after another, and then someone said, why don't you just see a hematologist?
Did you ask what the hell's hematologist? Yeah,
well, at that point, of course, yeah. I mean, 35, I'm perfectly healthy as far as I knew. And I went and I ended up with Dr. Jacob Brand at Mount Sinai. And he came and saw me. He just looked at my blood tests and he said, you have a myeloproliferative disorder. Myeloproliferative. He said it really slow. And he handed me a brochure and he said, this is what you have. And
that's nine syllables.
It could be. I don't know how many.
That's
too many.
Not even, that's directly proportional to severity.
So, and I said, well, what does it? He goes, well, you're creating too many blood cells and luckily we can control it. And obviously, like anything, your mind goes, what does that mean? And I think I walked out of the first meeting saying, oh, I have a myeloproliferative disorder and I have a brochure. How bad could it be?
Welcome to what's the MPN? Welcome to NPN brochure.
So my brother happens to be in the sciences, and I called him up and I said, you know, the guy said to me, I have this myeloproliferative disorder, and I didn't say it right, I didn't spell it right, and he goes, no, it was almost disbelief. And as I started to read about it, I said, well, this sort of sucks. This isn't really good,
right?
And then you start reading that it. Sort
and
of,
you mean reading, because there was no internet.
Oh, there was no internet.
So. I was diagnosed in 96, so we're like, fucked by Clinton-era healthcare.
Right. No, and you didn't know what to do, right? Because so it was, how do I get to understand what it is that I have? And he was like, oh, you know, I came in, the treatment's easy. It's really not that big of a deal. And, you know, you read about it. And what did I read? That most people live 3 to 5 years. And I might call my brother and say, okay, this isn't just something. This just is got bullshit, real. Right? Yeah, this got real fast. And he's going, well, yeah, but you're 35. And most people that get it are 60. And I'm saying, I don't need to be part of the lucky sperm club.
But how does that help you in any way? Right. That's not data I need right now.
Well, so the thought was, and the way it was, he explained it to me, which made me feel better momentarily, was they died probably from other things as well because they were old. And now that I'm 62. I'm not buying any of it.
Wait, have you outlasted the people he thought was dead by the time you were diagnosed?
Well, it turns out that people who have it, you know, their bone marrow, they have other afflictions that happen. And so, yeah, I've outlasted a lot, but treatment helps, right? You just follow the treatment. And the one thing that I learned early on, aside from reading, is just manage it. Mm-hmm. And not only manage it, but manage it so that the people that are treating you respect you when you say something about what you have, even though that's hard to do because they've spent years learning it. But you can basically read up in most things and educate yourself to the point of being able to speak like an authority.
So outside of that fabulous pamphlet you got that totally solved all your problems on one clear day, do you feel like you were spoken to as a person, as a father? Or just as like a number or data
no,
point?
No, Dr. Rand was amazing. He as much time as I needed and wanted, he would explain anything. He spoke slowly because the words were as 9 syllables, you said?
Yeah.
So they were all big words and nothing resonated. And the more you read about it, the worse it could seem. And he sort of kept it on a very real level saying, right now you have nothing to worry about. And we're going to put you on one baby aspirin every day to solve your problems.
That was it?
That's the way it started, yeah. So,
and they smell good too. Like baby aspirin to like, I just remember their smell.
John, what was it? Bear, St. Joseph's.
St. Joseph's aspirin.
That's what it was, with orange flavored. Mm-hmm. So I got to take one every single day. And that lasted for years. And then the disease progressed a little bit. Obviously, it's not fatal because I'm here, but I needed to up the meds, right?
Rumors of your death have been greatly exaggerated.
Agreed. So, yeah. So as it progressed and things got a little more dire, I had to just up the meds and get into real medication.
Is it genetic? Is this something you can pass down?
No.
No?
No.
Well, that's good.
No. This is what I call it, the lucky sperm club. I was born with it, and I got the one that,
and you're gonna
that
die
created
with it. Yeah.
And I will die with it. Hopefully not from it, but with it.
Right, exactly. And hopefully in 30 years.
And amen.
So you're living with this through your 30s and 40s.
Yes.
And did it influence your perspective on your work? We're going to get to what you do, which is coaching businesses, but you know, having started 2 companies myself, you know, having healthcare benefits, having come from what I went through, was so important to make sure that people that I hire that become part of our team, you know, reflect what I wish that I had,
right,
or what we believe is deserved.
1,000%. No, of course it influenced everything I did after a while. You begin to realize how precious life is and what you have to do in order to maintain it, if you will. And it really comes down to management. And if you have the right attitude and you don't fear anything and you decide, I'm going to manage this, then you do your best. You learn as much as you can and you become your own advocate. And that's what's helped and guided me through it.
Do you think that there's a conflation between no fucks to give and having no fear?
It's a great question. You need to manage, right? So you have to give a fuck. You can't just say, no, this isn't going to be
there are anything. Some things that you must give a fuck about right. And some things you should not give a fuck
right,
about.
Right. You have to determine, and it's important. Obviously, it's important enough to have to care about it and to manage it. And if you don't, then it's not good. So you have to manage it and care about it, but you just have to have no fear. Maybe of the MRI machine, but nothing else.
Well, that's the scanxiety. I love that phrase, right?
Yeah. Well,
is that part of your checkups? You have to go in every now and then?
I go in a lot, but the MRIs are not unless something happens. And then I know that I'm in for a battery of exams.
Mm.
And it sort of is. The interesting thing is, and I hope this isn't too much of a tangent, February of 20, I thought I had the flu and things lasted a long time. And I couldn't believe it that the flu was lasting day 5, day 6, day 7. And then one day I'm sitting there.
You had monkeypox.
I had monkeypox, is right. And I looked at my wife and I said, you know, it's hard to breathe, but if I go to the hospital, they're going to make a shit show out of it. And they're going to take MRIs and they're going to take tests and it's going to take forever. And I don't know what it is. And all it is a little challenge breathing. And it was 2 days and I lived through it and I got better. And just the fact that that was in my mind, I would have probably been in the hospital had I not had the fear of being poked and probed and 72 blood tests and we have to find out what's wrong, pictures all over the place. So in some ways I'm fearing any sickness, mm-hmm. But I also know that I have to address it. And and that was well before we knew that there was this thing called COVID-19.
You were an early adopter.
I was very early.
Well,
and I was
an
early survivor, right? But I did survive it and it was fine. And I am fine. I found, obviously, the antibodies were there when they finally came out with tests. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy the way it turned out okay.
Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall.
I didn't have a great fall. Thank you.
All right. On that note, we will be right back after a quick break.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I've been meeting a lot of people in recent months who never realized that that's what they had before we knew what it was.
Right.
And you recovered.
100%, yeah.
So no late effects, no long COVID?
No, I don't know what long COVID is anyway. I sort of ignore that and just keep living. But I've had fatigue. I had fatigue for probably 8 or 9 months. Like we're at the point where I would just go and say, okay, I'm taking a nap. I'll be back. Mm-hmm. But that's the extent.
But I mean, you've been at this for 27 years. You know your body by now.
Yeah. But you don't know the fatigue. You don't know. So the negative about being at this for 27 years is that you think a lot when something happens, right? You have some anomaly go on, a malady go on, right? I'm really, really tired. I'm really, really tired a lot. So what does that mean? Does that mean my blood's getting thicker? Does that mean my blood's getting thinner? Does that mean that my bone marrow is giving? You don't know. And you have to look and see. Those are moments. There are real moments when you just sit and say, okay, so what is this? Where does this come from?
I have a lot of friends who've survived hematologic disorders, and there's a lot of odd parallels to brain cancer because it's invisible.
Yeah.
You can't, your blood is in charge of you. You can't see it. There's nothing you do about it. It's not like you can see breast cancer and remove something. There's no part of that that you can get rid of.
Right. No, I do get rid of it by the drugs, right? So the myeloproliferative is too many, and the medication does get rid of it. That the biggest concern is, will my bone marrow give out, right? But I don't live thinking about it one day, to be honest.
Right. Well, I mean, this is like, what's the point of living in fear if it's something you can't necessarily control the entirety of?
Right. And I actually asked a question, which still is open. Is, why don't you just farm some of my bone marrow now so when I give out, I don't need a match, you just throw it back in? And the answer is because when you have overactive bone marrow, they just don't want you to have it again. And that would be interesting since the alternative is awkward.
So you have too many blood cells.
Yeah.
Red cells or white cells?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Plasma, all of them?
Yes. Yes to all of
them. So it's like the Japanese subway system of arteries and veins?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have it's white cells, red cells, and platelets.
So help me understand. So that makes it thicker?
Yeah. Sludge.
Okay. So it predisposes you to clots?
I have a couple clots.
Okay. Clearly I'm a doctor.
Yeah, you're doing right a good there. Job here. You're diagnosing me.
Have you ever gone in for like stents or things like that?
No, so that you don't know where it's going to happen. So I would travel. I was in the footwear industry and I traveled to Asia. I spent a lot of time in China.
Wait, you in the footwear industry after chopping off the front of your foot?
After the shoes. The
was
shoes,
that before or after?
I wanted to chop off my foot because the pain was excruciating. And one trip I came back and I went for my regular checkup and the doctor said something's wrong. You have to go. And I guess they did an x-ray of my stomach and they saw a clot. It's called Budd-Chiari disease.
Wait, more acronyms. More syllables?
More syllables. Budd-Chiari. B-U-D-D. Okay. Chiari. C-H-A-R.
You're full of these words today.
Dude, listen, do you have people walk in with simple things?
Hi, my arm hurts. No, you have to leave now. That's not severe enough. Get out of here, healthy person.
Yeah, so it is what it is, right? I had a blood clot. I didn't know what it was. My liver was swollen. I didn't know my liver was swollen. My spleen is swollen. Oh, my God, my spleen is swollen. So I live with a little bit of an enlarged liver and a little bit of an enlarged spleen.
You have like an extraordinarily supportive family, I hope?
Everyone.
Everyone?
Couldn't, yeah.
They stuck with you.
The whole time.
They're still there.
They have no choice, right? But yeah, no, my brothers are just absolutely wonderful. My sisters, my wife, kids, absolutely good.
My dad's kind of theory of life through aging was that the ideal secret is to clean up nice, try to make it look good, but never look under the hood. What's under your hood? We know. It's kind of a hot mess of medicines and scans and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
I was reading, I love this part, that you were very open about how you were a paperboy.
I was.
The early beginnings.
That's the way I started.
And what did you learn from being a paperboy besides tolerance of neighbors that didn't like you?
No, so it was the brilliance of an entrepreneur. What happens when you start as a paperboy is that you learn every aspect of a business. You learn customer service. You learn fulfillment.
How to ride a bike?
I couldn't ride a bike because I had too many papers. I had to use a shopping cart.
No way.
115 papers at one point.
Wait, so you pushed a Walbaum's Pathmark shopping cart around your neighborhood every day?
Yeah, it was like a granny cart is what it was.
You fit hundreds of newspapers in a granny cart?
You could fit it right up to the top.
So you learn like spatial orientation too.
Yeah, you also learn that on Thursday when you get the Sunday paper, you start delivering it to those that ordered the Sunday paper.
We did that. The Sunday Times, we would pick up on like Saturday afternoon.
That's correct.
Yeah.
No, but there was a magazine section and there were a couple of sections you'd get early.
And the rest would come.
Yeah. And then if you tried to do it all on a Sunday, the Sunday paper was too big.
You learn supply demand. You learn like economics because you're getting tips and collecting.
Well, you're collecting. So your accounts payable, your accounts receivable because you have to pay the guy. Yeah, you're receivable for collecting money. You knew that you had to provide good service to get tips.
And you had to know the weather. Too, because otherwise you wrap everything in a bag.
Well, guess what? You always wrapped it in a bag because you never knew. You just had to do it.
Right.
You were just prepared always.
So did you like throw them from the street or did you individually walk up to the houses?
Well, so I actually walked up because that was the way you got the best tips because when you put it right where they wanted it, that was the most desired effect to get the largest return on your labor.
Wow. So really? You were 13, 14?
I must have been 12, 13, 14. I don't know when you were allowed to. I think you had to get working papers back then.
Working? I had working
Do you remember
papers.
That?
Yes.
The little green card that...
Mm-hmm. My first job, I was a busboy. Mm. And it was terrible. It was just like absolutely terrible. But it taught me a lot about being nice to people and, hey, I need water. Like, okay, you're rude, but I will be nice and come over and give you water. Here you go, sir. Have a nice meal. But then I my career took a strange twist, which I've talked about every now and then. I was playing piano at the time. I was getting lessons and getting classical, jazz, whatever. And I got hired at like one of the old school like mafia speakeasy restaurant lounge bars underground on the island.
Oh, brilliant.
And I played piano like for the Goodfellas.
No.
For like 2.5 years straight. And you really needed to have a level of cultural decorum at that place. Because they also tended bar at like 15 years old. I learned how to roll Cubans because the bartender Rico was from Puerto Rico. He taught me everything I know. And I learned how to make like raw egg Caesar salad at the table.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Those are real great, interesting skills to have at 16 years old.
Makes a paperboy look like an amateur.
The mink stoles were coming in. I had this oversized brandy snifter on the grand piano. I mean, out of fiction came fact with this ridiculousness. But there's something to be said for having like retail customer experience at a young age.
Oh, it was a full experience. It was supply side and demand side. And it was, you know, you had to sell, you had to do, you just did everything.
So talk me through how you got from paperboy to what you're doing today.
So I guess...
Minus the shoe business.
No. Well, but the shoe business was real, right? That was part of it. I think I figured that earning money, you could create, right? If you create something, you could earn. And so I had owned businesses and operated businesses for basically my whole life. It started as a paper boy. I had the local snack bar.
Cool.
It was a snack bar and pro shop at the ice skating rink / pool in Great Neck. And I did that for about 3 years. And that was, I had 17 people working for me. They were kids. And I had to just like manage a staff. I had to, again, do the purchasing, do the selling, do the whole nine yards. And I got very interested in business. And I ended up in the footwear industry. I got married and my wife's family was in the industry. And they said, forget the snack bar. Come with us. We'd love to have you in our footwear industry. Business. So I did join the footwear business and they really, what I thought was a disservice, did me a service by saying, start in the warehouse and throw the cartons around and then look at all the return shoes that come back to see what's wrong with them. And they sent me through every single department that there was in the company at the lowest possible level.
Does that happen anymore?
I think so, actually. You know, there are some wise people out there still that say, you know, if you want to learn how to do it, start at the bottom and learn how they do these things. So when you're at the top, you know what it takes to get the job done. And that's sort of what I learned. And that's how I mean, I'm a people person. So I'm able to, I talk with people and I relate very well with people. People relate well with me. So I get to speak to people in a great way while understanding what they're going through in business mostly and personally as well. And it makes it easy to be able to do what I'm doing today, which is coaching and mentoring people through their challenges and opportunities. I've been there. I've been through a lot of things that when business is fantastic, when the government wants to shut down in 1992 or 93, Bill Clinton was going to sanction China and there was going to be dumping duties abound and God, the world was turning upside down for us in the shoe company. And so you learn to deal with all the, whatever's thrown at you, you can throw something back and you learn how to deal with it and cope with it. And it's generally through people skills and it's generally through your mindset. It's not done through knowledge as much as it is making sure that you have the proper perspective of what you're doing.
I think we've lost the art of people skills in the next generation. I don't want to paint a broad brush, but I see the way my children are getting taught in schools. I see the curricula that we used to have in the 80s and 90s. We had home economics and communication courses, and they're just not teaching that the way they used to anymore. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I'm very active. I actually ran for school board this year to see if I could make a difference in what's happening with the curriculum and with the policy and everything. And, you know, I truly believe that in education and that you have to teach kids how to do it, the participation trophies don't work. And what works is that when you put kids out there and you actually go to the basics and they have to learn the basics. And I think some of it's been lost. And what's not been lost, it's been politicized. And we're not doing our next generation any good.
I used to work for a nonprofit I founded called Stupid Cancer. And after like 16, 15 years, it was massively successful. It took 15 years and four failures before it. And do you feel it's fair to say that most people don't realize that there are so many sedimentary layers beneath what they perceive as success?
Oh, no, I don't think anyone sees it. They just see the glory.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see the work and what happens. I mean, so my kids are swimmers. I was a swimmer. And after Mike Phelps's last Olympics, he had a commercial with Under Armour that showed him working out and what he did. And it was a minute and 30 seconds. I'm getting chills talking about it, but it was the most emotional thing you can see, where he showed what it takes, and what he didn't just go out there and swim fast and win. It took forever. It took practice after practice and throwing up and whatever the challenges were, he had to face them. And when the commercial ended, it said, "It's what you do in the dark that makes you shine in the light." Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
It's what you do in the dark that makes you shine in the light.
You have to watch the commercial, because when you watch a commercial, tears came to our eyes. Of course, we're a swimming family and we're very involved in swimming. And my kids follow Michael and whoever whatever's happening in swimming today. So
But that speaks to self-advocacy as well.
Wow.
We talk about how not everyone has born with the chutzpah to be their own advocate. And learning what that means and understanding you have the power to challenge authority, to ask for that second opinion, to just to clap back a little bit. People have to figure that out when they're not at the doctor's, when they're not facing a health crisis, or when they're coming out of the aftermath of something that dropped on them. That's the dark times. You have an opportunity to find, you mentioned this before, this community of people who are like-minded. It's tribalism for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to wrap up in a few minutes, but I really do want to lean into your perspective on, have you interacted with other people with this condition? How has serving the LLS community and the team and training model helped you become an advocate for others?
How do you become an advocate for others? You just have to share with others that exactly what we're talking about. You have to be your own advocate. You have to go out there and do things. You obviously remember everyone who's been harmed by the disease, and you help everyone whom you can. But you do it by knowing it takes you to learn how to do it. There are layers underneath, and you have to work within those layers. You have to do it in the dark. You do have to learn about as much as you can to be your own advocate. I'm not scared to question any doctor on anything, because now I know that they're people like we are. And sometimes when we're reading stuff and we just read and read and read, you might know something or not know something, or just make them question to think a little deeper about what it is that's the next best step.
Well, I know what we're not going to call this episode, Do It in the Dark, because that'll be gravely misconstrued by our listeners. But I think it is the theme of our conversation today.
Yeah.
All right. Larry Reines is the founding member of the Aaron Meyer Consulting Group.
Yes.
And a rare disease advocate. I'm going to try to pronounce it myself. Here, let's see if I've learned something today. Progressive myoproliferative neoplasm.
Well, no, myeloproliferative disorder. But it is, MPN is a myeloproliferative. You're right. It is a neoplasm.
I've been appropriately corrected. Thank you so much for coming
on
the show,
Larry.
Thank
you for having me. This was a wonderful experience, and I hope people take to heart that they have to learn to do for themselves as well as going to medicine for the answer.
Out of Patients with Matthew Zachary is an Off-Script Health production. The executive producers are Matthew Zachary and Andrew McDowell. Our senior producer is Sarah Rosa Davies. It's mixed and edited by Sarah Rosa Davies and Kyle Moore. Special thanks to Brianna Seeley for added support. If you like the show, ratings and reviews are always welcome. Leave us a message anytime at 855-AUDIO-66. That's 855-AUDIO-66 to share your healthcare shitness with us, and we might just play them on the air on a future episode. For more information about this show and Off-Script Health, visit offscript.com. That's offscript, no T, .com.